Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show. Co-host Joe with you all today. Always a blast to be in here with you all. And, well, I don't actually have anything to say for those of you if this is your first time listening, but the Silk or Joe Show comes to you courtesy of the Main Street Radio Network, so we want to thank the Main Street Radio Network for allowing this program to exist in the first place, and you can find them at mainstreetradionetwork.com. Yes, the Silk or Joe Show has been a production of the Main Street Radio Network since, 2013, November-ish of that year. It wasn't known as the Silk or Joe Show back then, of course. It was known as something else, but been around since then, so it's been around a while under different management. I've only been attached to it for a little over 5 years, but again, mainstreetradionetwork.com if you want to learn more about the show, and you can also find podcasts for the show and the Al and Nathan show. Why not? I host that show several times a week anyway, so you can check that out at mainstreetradionetwork.com. and if you want to learn more about the late Al and Nathan and his program, alandnathan.com too. All great resources for you all to check out. And I want to thank the Salem Radio Network, too, for distributing this show, which can be found on social media, Facebook at Main Street Radio Network, and X at Main Street Radio. So, this week, we got our ruling for the Carmelo Anthony trial, which led to some interesting reactions from various communities, and a lot of money flowing in for the murderer. They shut that down, the GoFundMe. This killer had a GoFundMe going. Everyone knew what the facts of the case were already, though, so it's not like there were any surprises here. The only surprise, I guess, was that a black man could not get away with stabbing a white man in this country. But a lot of people seem to be quite surprised by that. I mean, you had this one woman out there saying, well, what do I tell my 5 grandkids or whatever? Or it was either kids or grandkids. What do I tell them? Well, tell them, don't go in seeking a fight and don't stab someone to death when you clearly have a premeditated motive. That's simple enough. Pretty hard not to do it. But that's just been the consistent reaction that you've seen from people. That somehow this was an aberration. And it's just white people can get away with whatever they want to do. That's what some people have been out there saying as well. In response to this. As a matter of fact, I believe it was Carmelo Anthony's grandmother who said that. Because, and this goes to why we get stuff like food deserts, why we get these communities that chase businesses out of there and then complain that businesses are gone, because they just are not capable of any accountability. it's understandable, the grandmother will never, or the mother even, or the parents will never see that their child is responsible, but like, the whole communities of people are this way, where not only is it that their kid is not responsible, but the neighbor's kid is not responsible either. No one is guilty. Someone must be doing it. Space aliens must be coming in and robbing and looting stores and chasing them out. Space aliens must be killing people. But it's certainly not any of the children, no. They just need activities. And I see that a lot here in where I live, where we've been having this rash of teen takeovers in this general area, and we had one just up the street from me. And the city's response is, well, we just need activities for these people. You don't do these things if all you are missing is activities in your life. there's a little bit more going on. For 100 years ago, people didn't have activities after school to occupy them, especially the impoverished. You didn't see teen takeovers back then, did you? 1920s weren't well known for mobs of people smashing things unless it happened to be related to organized crime. So where's this narrative come from that, oh, all that's missing is stuff for the youth? It's like what the Democrats said about ISIS. Oh, they just need jobs. ISIS needs jobs. That will solve everything if you just give ISIS jobs. No, that wouldn't solve anything. That's not why they're doing it. In fact, you have highly educated people with very well-paying jobs who quit them to join with ISIS. So jobs is not the answer. Activities are not the answer. This is their activity. This is what they want to do. It's a matter of culture. It's a matter of how these people have been raised. It's a matter of who they look up to. It's a matter of lack of parental involvement, and except to when you, and we see this in schools, by the way. And this is what I was about to stumble on into before I had to preface that with the acceptable in schools, by the way, because I've read a lot of stories of teachers who say, you know, their parents are not involved with the kids at all unless the kid gets a failing grade. Then the parent goes after the teacher, not the kid, but the teacher for failing the student. The student doesn't do any of the work. Student doesn't do any of the tests. Student flunks out. The parents go after the teacher. It's your fault. How dare you give my child the bad grade? Not how dare my kid be stupid. How dare my kid neglect their work? No, how dare the teacher do anything that could be perceived as a slight to my child? It's about respect, is what we hear all the time. You don't. It's not earned. You just have to give it automatically on their terms. And what they perceive as respect is just hand over everything. But then again, then we see that with the EBT stuff. When it looked like last year the EBTs were going to get cut, food stamps were going to get cut, and there was just, you know, threatening of looting and rioting if that were to happen because it was an entitlement. They deserved it for existing. That's it. I exist. Give me all your taxpayer money. So that's just the mentality that pervades. And again, that's where we see these communities with the food deserts where, though we deserve to have these stores here, it's our rights to have it that store here. Doesn't matter that we loot it, doesn't matter we abuse the employees, doesn't matter that the corporations cannot, in fact, suffer the claims of having this place here and the losses therefrom. No, none of that matters. What matters is we deserve it, and we're going to abuse every privilege that we have. And then when it goes away, we're going to blame someone else. There's no personal accountability. There's no accountability. Now you might be wondering, well, where does this thinking come from? Particularly given we're talking about communities of color here, and we can trace that back to, at the very least, the O.J. Simpson trial, you know, where it was just revenge against Whitey is what that ruling was about. But then, you know, it seems like, you know, you'd think that we had improvement in race relations under the Bush administration, but then Obama came into office, and polls reflect this, by the way. When Obama came into office, suddenly people start thinking, well, race relations didn't really improve, did they? They're going getting worse. And perhaps that had something to do with Obama and Trayvon Martin. You might recall he's the little thug who tried to kill somebody. And after trying to break into a bunch of houses, he was stopped by a neighborhood watch member, and he tried to kill the member of Neighborhood Watch, tried to ambush him, and then there was a whole to-do about racism. That's where Black Lives Matter started, and Obama said, if I had a son, it would look like Trayvon. But if Obama had a son, he wouldn't be scoping out houses to rob. He wouldn't be carrying the ingredients to make a legal narcotic, basically. No, that wouldn't have been the case. Now, would it? But you got to throw away the evil and just pretend that everything was good that this person was doing because of the skin color. And that's what Obama did. And that's the kind of race relations that Obama bought into. That, and in fact, his Department of Justice, the moment that it came into office, pretty much said, never bring a lawsuit against a black man. That came out when the Black Panthers were intimidating voters in Philadelphia. And there was people in the DOJ's election watch groups or whatever, civil rights groups, who were saying, hey, we need to bring charges against these people. And top-down rhetoric, never bring a charge against the black man. That was the Obama administration's position on it. And then we see race relations deteriorating after that because suddenly, oh, well, he's in office. We're not going to see we have a free rein, a loose rein on us. Let's do whatever we want. The laws don't apply to us anymore. And then this escalates until 2016, where you have Black Lives Matter activists in 2016 saying, kill all the whites. It's a race war. And we actually played footage of that. Breitbart provided footage, and the Al Nathan Show back then had some clips about it. I know, I got them. So that it was known in 2016 that race relations had deteriorated that much. And then came 2020, where, boy, we really had a venting about that, didn't we? And then now here we are, 4, 5, 6 years later, and what's going on? We're seeing that, well, we're at the point now where black people can commit murder and their communities say that they're innocent and they're found guilty. And it's like, oh, well, it's racism. This guy was railroaded. It wasn't a fair trial. There's no way it could have been a fair trial. If it was a fair trial, he would have been found innocent. The outcome had been predetermined by these communities. And is it just the loud voices we're hearing? Is it blacks overall who think, well, justice was served, fair is fair, whatever. Is it just these loud voices? Well, it's hard to tell because, again, we've had these same loud voices going all the way back to the O.J. Simpson trial. It doesn't seem like they ever left us except for, like, you know, during George W. Bush's administration, and maybe that was it. So I like to attribute it myself to the activist class, because who are the ones you see in these communities out there, the community organizers, the ones who profit by keeping blacks separated from the rest of the population, the charlatans who promise that the easy life, if you just listen to them, if you just cry racism when they tell you to, you know, those are the ones who are really pushing this toxic narrative that has been keeping black people oppressed. And I guess we shouldn't really be surprised that it saw a resurgence under Obama, because Democrats see that as a way to maintain a perpetual voting class of the black community. That's why they've been so happy to throw blacks under the bus in favor of illegal immigrants, because they know these race hucksters and charlatans will keep the black community oppressed for them. More Silk or Joshua after this break.
June is National Dairy Month, and the dairy aisle is offering more than many shoppers may realize. From time-tested staples to exciting new finds, here's culinary instructor and cookbook author Brooke Parkhurst with more.
The dairy aisle starts with the basics people already know well, like milk, egg, cheese, yogurt, and butter. They're affordable, versatile, and naturally rich in nutrients like protein and calcium. And they're already a regular part of how most families eat every week.
That's backed up by updated dietary guidance, which puts greater emphasis on protein and nutrient-dense foods, many of which have long lived in the dairy aisle. It's a win for households looking for everyday value without sacrificing nutrition.
Beyond the staples, there's a lot happening. Cottage cheese is having a real moment in new recipes. There are globally inspired dips, probiotic drinks like kefir, and plenty of snackable options that make quick meals and snacks easier at home and on the go.
For ideas and inspiration using items from the dairy aisle, visit easyhomemeals.com.
June is Internet Safety Month, an annual reminder to keep your personal information secure. Stay one step ahead of cyber risks and build healthy online habits. That's why TikTok is partnering with digital safety expert and parent, creator Kathy Pedrias, to launch a safety starter pack for families. The starter pack helps families have proactive conversations about teens' online experiences, making digital safety and security feel more approachable. Kathy Pedrias offers three simple tips to help families create a safer online experience.
First, run a security checkup to manage trusted devices, enable two-step verification, and review important account alerts. Second, use TikTok's family pairing feature to build on the many preset safety, privacy, and security settings already turned on for teens. And last, be curious about your teen's online experiences and use TikTok's Guardian's Guide to talk about creating positive digital boundaries together.
For more, visit TikTok.com/safety.
Building Safety Month, an awareness campaign by the International Code Council, highlights how codes implemented across the country and safety professionals keep us safe. This year's theme, Built to Last, starts with how you can get involved. ICC CEO John Belsick explains.
Building safety starts at home, because that's where people spend most of their time. We often see that small issues like overloaded outlets, loose handrails, or blocked exits can turn into serious risks if they're not addressed.
Another focus this year, resilience, especially as natural disasters become more frequent.
Modern building codes are one of the most effective tools we have when it comes to disaster resilience. They're designed to reduce damage, protect the people inside, and help communities recover quicker from disasters like hurricanes and wildfires.
And accessibility is key.
Communities Without Limits means designing buildings and public spaces that are usable, intuitive, and welcoming for people of all ages and abilities.
To learn more, including how to reach out to local representatives to advocate for the latest codes, visit buildingsafetymonth.org.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm Jason Derulo. I love that music connects to people all over the country. But unfortunately, so does something else. Childhood hunger. 15 million kids struggle with hunger right here in America. And yet, every year, billions of pounds of surplus food in the U.S. go to waste instead of going to the children in need. Feeding America is working to change this. The Feeding America Nationwide Network of Food Banks rescues this surplus of food to help provide meals to families in virtually every community in the United States, including yours. But they just can't do this alone. Join me in the fight against hunger in America. For more information on what you can do to get involved, visit feedingamerica.org. That's feedingamerica.org. Together we can solve hunger. Together, we're feeding America. A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silk Road Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Silk Road Joe Show, co-host Joe here today. As you heard, I was about to slip with the Alan Nathan Show. That's because my emails decided to jumble everything together, and I was looking at the wrong email. I should have been looking at a different one. But anyway, we are joined now by Michael Pack. He is president and CEO of Palladium Pictures, LLC, an independent film company he launched in 2023. LLC in 2023. This bio kind of rhymes. But Michael Pack, appreciate you being on the show. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing okay, thank you. So, you all have a new documentary out. It's about scientists who question the effectiveness of the lockdowns. And anyone who's been listening to this show or the Alan Nathan Show during that time would have understood these scientists perhaps didn't have the best of response to their questioning the authority.
Exactly. I mean, and we try to tell that story. So, this film is called Lockdown Dissidents. It's made in partnership with the Wall Street Journal opinion section. It's free on their site. You can go to our website, which is palladiumpictures.com, and find it, or their website, wsj.com, or their YouTube page, and just search for Lockdown Dissidents, or go to the page of our free films with them, which is wsj.com/opiniondocs, and find all three of them that are free. But we tell that story, and I believe probably your listeners do know the story, but many people around the country do not. Lots of people still think Dr. Fauci is a great hero and that he did save us all during COVID. And I think we need to set the record straight or we'll make the same mistakes all over again. And that's really the purpose of the film. So we tell the story from the beginning of the lockdown, beginning of COVID, at the end of 2019 and the beginning of 2020, you know, up through, up through the end. And we tell the story, as you know, of these people who disagreed with the idea that everybody should be locked down, Jay Bhattacharya, Scott Atlas, and others. They had data to prove their point starting in March. And in spite of all that, schools stayed locked down for years, and lockdowns generally went on, and they were, as you implied, I think, in your introduction, they were censored and suppressed. Tell the story about what happened inside the administration. We have some insiders like Scott Atlas and Robert Redfield, and then we talk about the uncovering of all that censorship in the Twitter files and in the lawsuit and other things.
Right. And I guess to no one's surprise, we saw from emails that had been leaked out later on that really there was no science behind the lockdowns at all. So not only were they suppressing these dissident scientists that you describe in the documentary, but there wasn't even any reason for them to, except by weight of sheer personality and willpower.
Well, that's right. I don't believe that they should suppress contrary scientific theories, you know, by reputable scientists. The three, Jay Bhattacharya, Martin Kulldorff, and Sunetra Gupta, put together their alternative in the Great Barrington Declaration, and they're from Stanford, Harvard, and Oxford. You know, they were called fringe, but those are not fringe places. So even if they were wrong, they shouldn't have been suppressed. But as you just said, Joe, it turns out they were right, and they had the data. So it makes the suppression of their ideas even worse, way worse.
And my concern, though, is that I know some people who, you know, they are really in on the cult of Fauci. One even has a Dr. Fauci bobblehead. But I don't think that even if they view the documentary, they just consider it right-wing propaganda. And if such a situation were to repeat itself, they would, again, trust the experts and just assume that, you know, right-wingers are the ones who are the ignorant ones. Therefore, I got to follow the science and not think any further beyond that narrative. Mm.
Well, I make documentary films. I've been doing it for many decades. We've done over 15 that have all been nationally broadcast on PBS, including a pretty recent one about Chief Justice Clarence Thomas. And I believe that you can't convince people that are totally committed on the other side. But in this country, there are a lot of people in the middle, and they can be convinced. And they haven't heard these views at all. I mean, unless they're listeners to your radio program or similar ones, and we aim to reach those. The Wall Street Journal has a very broad reach. You know, they have a huge audience, and they're not all exactly where we are. So I'm hoping to convince those that are in the middle and that are open-minded. I think there are a lot of them. I think Donald Trump's, you know, two elections prove it. You know, he's not only elected by MAGA diehards, but people in the middle who had not heard those views before. So I agree with you about some people, and I know plenty of people like that, too. I'm in Chevy Chase, Maryland, you know, a very blue part of the country. All my neighbors had thank you, Dr. Fauci signs on their lawn. They cannot be convinced. But I don't think all the country is like that, and I'm hopeful that people will watch my film with an open mind. And we are not. We try to make films that are not right-wing propaganda. We try to tell the story of what happened in a pretty fair and measured way and present the evidence that Jay Bhattacharya, Scott Atlas, and others had and what happened in a fact-based, straightforward, story-oriented manner.
Right, because one of the things that allowed the lockdowns to succeed where they did is people simply abided by them. And, you know, we certainly had the power to at least civil disobedience with that matter. But, you know, people were convinced that this is what the experts were saying. So if this information gets out, if more people learn about it who haven't learned about it already, then perhaps next time it won't be so easy. And there would certainly be a lot more backlash against politicians who push for it.
I hope that is true. I mean, Scott Atlas says towards the end of our film that during COVID, most Americans, almost all of us, gave up some of our inalienable rights that are supposed to be inalienable, meaning government cannot take them away, such as freedom of speech, such as freedom of assembly, such as the right freedom of, you know, religious freedom, the right to worship. When, you know, the government asks, you know, churches, synagogues, and mosques to close, they generally complied. So next time, I hope we do fight harder. And I actually think that people have learned something. The respect for these kinds of authorities have gone down. You know, so and we have Jay Bhattacharya, who was criticized by the left, head of the NIH, rather, running the NIH, as well as being the acting director of the CDC. So maybe it will be different next time. But we can't count on that happening automatically. You know, we have to get the truth out, and that's the purpose of the film.
And one refrain that I've heard is that, well, there's this lack of faith in the scientific community now, and stories like this just exasperate it. But, I mean, if the scientific community has failed us, as we saw with the lockdowns, then why shouldn't there be a lack of faith in it?
That is right. I mean, I think that what they needed to do, what Dr. Fauci and others needed to do, at the very minimum, was have sort of, you know, epistemological modesty, not assert that their views were the only views, but be open. And if they did, then we wouldn't have lost respect for the scientific establishment. So I believe that it's important to, in fact, have a public health experts that you can respect and a process that you can respect. But you are right. They have to fix the process before they can recapture the public's respect.
Yeah, because if we see that there's been no reform or anything, if we see that science, I mean, this isn't just with lockdowns either. I've been talking about this stuff in the same vein with climate change, where you have this immense pressure to come up with one solution that is scientifically approved by the community at large, whether or not the data actually reflects that. And that's not the nature of science. Science isn't dogma. Science is inquiry.
That is a very good other example, perhaps an even worse example. I agree with you completely. Yeah, calling people who don't agree with you climate deniers, parallel to Holocaust deniers, is not a way to have a debate.
Well, Michael Pack, appreciate you being on the show to talk about this. And again, listeners, he has this new documentary out, and you can go, well, then I'll tell you at the beginning of the next segment where you can find it real quick.
The most complete college student offer Microsoft has ever made available is here now. From April 15th through June 30th, verified college students can purchase select Windows 11 PCs and be eligible for the Microsoft College Offer. Mark Linton, Vice President at Microsoft, has more.
The Microsoft College Offer gives students who are new subscribers 12 months of Microsoft 365 Premium for productivity and schoolwork, 12 months of Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, where you access hundreds of games, and a free design your own Xbox wireless controller, where you can personalize your gaming setup with custom colors. And with Windows 11, students could choose from a wide range of amazing PCs that are eligible for the Microsoft College Offer at great prices, colors, and specs, so they can find the right PC that fits them best.
Windows 11 PCs plus the Microsoft College offer is available to U.S. students with a valid .edu email. Terms apply. Learn more at windows.com/backtoschooloffer. That's windows.com/backtoschooloffer. As summer arrives and people head outside, doctors are preparing for what they call trauma season, a time when serious injuries and ER visits spike nationwide. May is National Stop the Bleed Month, a time when everyone should learn how to respond to a bleeding emergency. With more, here's Dr. David Scott Shapiro, chair of the American College of Surgeons Stop the Bleed Committee.
Uncontrolled bleeding is a leading cause of preventable death. Thousands of lives could be saved every year if bystanders learn to control that severe bleeding and are empowered to act immediately at the scene, even before EMS arrives.
The American College of Surgeons urges everyone to learn three simple steps: apply firm pressure, pack the wound, and use a tourniquet when needed.
A person with serious bleeding can bleed to death within minutes. These are practical skills anyone can learn and use in those first critical moments. The ACS Stop the Bleed course is made for everyone.
To find training and to get an ACS Stop the Bleed kit, visit stopthebleed.org/summer.
May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and did you know that feeding birds is good for your mental health? A 2024 study confirmed what millions of Americans are already discovering. Birding isn't just a hobby, it's a wellness habit. Just 30 minutes of bird watching has been shown to reduce stress more effectively than a standard walk outdoors. Wildlife advocate Adrian Chizis is the director of consumer and bird engagement at Global Harvest Foods.
That daily ritual of noticing, watching, and being present is one of the simplest and most accessible good day habits anyone can build this month. And it's remarkably easy. You could be a bird watcher by the end of the day. All you need is a feeder, a bag of quality seed, and a spot near a window where you can enjoy the view.
Quality seed like Cool Bird Specialty Blends or Audubon Park Snack Stacks make it easy and keep the birds coming back. Visit morecoolbirds.com or audubonpark.com for beginner-friendly tips, seed guidance, and ideas for attracting birds to your yard.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silk or Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all this weekend. So we talked a little bit about voter fraud on the Alan Nathan Show earlier this week. And, you know, I just got to wonder, can you really call it voter fraud in the case of Los Angeles if that's just kind of the way that the thing works? If that's just kind of the way the system works. It's a fraudulent system, perhaps. It's a system full of bugs, but it is how the system works. And we we see this response from the media. Elections in Los Angeles are legitimate. This is just how it works. They just take a while, that's all. But, like, at the same time, the system is designed to be fraudulent. So on the one hand, the media actually is kind of right about that. When they say that the system is working, this is just how elections are in Los Angeles. The trouble is, the elections are totally bogus and fraudulent by any reasonable, rational measure. But I guess the way liberals look at it, you know, they figure, well, people aren't just going to go out and commit fraud, therefore the system works. Like, no one's going to register the wrong way. People are swearing that they are telling the truth when they vote, therefore it works. The honor system. Liberals want you to believe that the honor system actually works. It's no different than the freaking gun-free zone mentality that they have, where, oh, well, see, there's a sign that says you don't bring guns here, so no one's going to bring guns. Well, it is illegal to vote fraudulently, therefore no one's actually going to do it, even though we made it impossible to detect. We can make it as impossible to detect as we like, and people won't vote fraudulently. In fact, they will point to the numbers if it came to it. If it ended up being a too-big-to-rig type situation, they would point to the numbers and say, well, see, all these people voted fraudulently, all these people voted, therefore this expanded access to the voting demographics, therefore this system works. Everyone voted, and no one committed fraud. Just because you can't spot it, just because you made it impossible to spot, doesn't mean it didn't happen. It's no different, really, also, than the way they do crime statistics, you know? They doctor the crime numbers, they lie about how many murders there are in communities, they lie about the crimes that happen, and then they say, well, look, see, we are safer, progressivism works, our law enforcement methods work. Look at these statistics. See, even though we doctored them, even though we faked them, the statistics don't lie. It's that mentality that they can just, by sheer willpower, actually, as we were talking about in the last segment, by sheer willpower and force of personality, alter reality to suit what they want. We have this data that says lockdowns work. Of course, it's just entirely fabricated. It's entirely us saying that they work. But that's enough. That's enough. We wouldn't lie to you. Therefore, you should believe us. That's it. That's all you need. Just someone's word. They're as good as their word. So, like, hypothetically, if, because we talked on the Al Nathan show earlier this week, you know, about how there was certain dearths of Republican participation in the elections in Los Angeles and California at large, because they know it's fraudulent, so why bother wasting a perfectly good Tuesday going to vote when it doesn't matter? Well, even if everyone had gone out to vote, they still had the ballots to screw things up, right? And that's where you would see crazy things like 150% of a community voted in the election. And we have seen that before. I don't make these numbers up, really. Over 100% of the, well, maybe 150%. I don't think we've seen that. But, you know, we have seen it before where 110, 115% of the community turned out to vote. In fact, in the opening segment, I mentioned the new Black Panthers holding up, places in Philadelphia, election centers in Philadelphia, and how there were possible lawsuits against them that the Obama administration decided to drop because they were bringing a lawsuit against the black man. Well, in that same election, in some of those same areas, we saw over 100% turnout for the election. And no one questioned it. No one was allowed to. The Obama administration didn't want you to. And liberals don't want you to question that. But we did see it. It is a thing that happens. And Democrats will say there is no fraud there. There is no fraud. Yes, over 100% people turned out. So what? There's no fraud there. How can you possibly question it, you election denier? Well, unless Trump won, in which case, oh boy, they would never stop the investigations. You would have the entire media apparatus, every Democrat in Congress, you'd have half the CIA and FBI looking into that. You know, whether or not the Trump administration instructed them to, they would anyway. You know, that's what it would be if it were happening under Trump. But it happened under a Democrat? Never mind. It's okay. Don't pretend the fraud didn't happen. So, yes, in California, if we saw that there were 120% of people turning out in an election, Democrats would just say, well, that's an example that of how much turnout our laws can generate and how many voters were being suppressed. That's what they mean by voter suppression. They mean that the fraudulent votes were suppressed. So what we see in Los Angeles, so easy to fraud. And you know, you may be wondering out there, well, how can it be easy to fraud? Because here I am, where I live in the middle of nowhere, I got to show ID to vote. I got to do this and that to vote. I got to do this and that to register to vote. Well, how can California be so bad? Well, let's go over it. Benny Johnson, another talk host and podcaster, he compiled on his X page a summary of how the voting laws are in California. Number one, anyone can register to vote from anywhere, any address, any street corner, any park, anywhere in the state. Number two, no ID required to vote. And number three, no signature required. Oh, and something actually he didn't put on here for voter registration for ID. I should put that annotated myself because I might be using this in the future. But as a form of ID for registering to vote, you can use a gym membership. You can use a piece of mail that was delivered to that particular place that has your name on it. That's all you need. You don't need a driver's license. You don't need a birth certificate. You don't need a social security number. You just need a gym membership to register to vote. So you get a gym membership, and then you register to vote at some warehouse somewhere, a P.O. box somewhere. That is perfectly legal. There's no way to trace you. There's no way to – there's nothing. There's probably – I don't know, there could be data centers out there just churning out with AI a bunch of fraudulent votes, and no one would know the difference. But anyway, there's no ID required to vote. There's no signature required to vote. Every voter is automatically mailed a ballot, and there's no limit on ballot harvesting. So you could, you know, get your computer there to churn out a bunch of fake names, fake gym memberships, and then register to vote with them all at the same address, and then you yourself bring 10,000 ballots that are all fake to a ballot drop box. No one can question it. Perfectly legal. And the drop boxes are unmonitored as well, so no one even sees that you are the one dropping 10,000 ballots off. So, hypothetically, later on, someone questions the election, they look at who voted, they can't see that you brought 10,000 ballots, they can't trace any fraud back to you, there is no way to trace the fraud at all. And ballots are counted for up to a week after the election. No ballots are counted until election day, and they're counted for a week after. So you don't even know where these ballot dumps are happening. They just bring them all in and count them. That's it. It's all mixed together. It's the perfect system for legitimizing fraud. It's impossible to trace that any fraud happened. If Republicans were smart, they would play this game. If Republicans were smart, they would realize, okay, fraud is legal now. Let's do it ourselves. Democrats are clearly doing it. It's our turn now. Why not? It's legal. Do it. So, but they won't. Why would they? Because what happens with situations like this? Spencer Pratt was an anomaly. Most Republicans will just fold over. Well, I can still manage to keep my little congressional seat here, or I can keep my token seat on the city council because there's this one group of hardcore red folks. So, you know what? I'm fine with it. I'm fine with this corruption. We see this in Baltimore. I've actually had William Hellman, old friend of the show, who's been on a whole bunch of times over the last 5 years, 6 years now. He has been firsthand seeing the sort of corruption and complacency that sets in with Republicans who perpetually lose. Suddenly, it becomes not about winning, but about maintaining the status quo, about keeping the donations coming in, about keeping your little power over that section of the party. Doesn't matter that your party has no political power. What matters is you have power and influence over a small set of people. That's what happens. Maintain your little fiefdom. It's the same thing that we see in the Senate. John Thune would rather be the leader of five Republican senators than have the entire Senate. He'd rather have that core group than actually win any seats in a midterm or do anything that helps the American people. Why? Because it pays more to sit back and do nothing. And it's easier to sit back and do nothing, especially when your job isn't on the line like his is. And again, as I've mentioned with the SAVE Act, which he's been repeatedly obstructing, kind of raises questions about how much fraud he benefits from. Perhaps someone should take a look at South Dakota's rules to see if they aren't too different from California's, especially given how Thune keeps getting elected over and over again and failing to deliver. At least we know in Texas they have a little bit better rules about voter fraud. Otherwise, John Cornyn would have won in the primaries. But anyway, that is the situation, though, in California. fraud is pretty much legal, or at least untraceable. It's the I could call it the perfect crime, except for the fact that it's so enabled by the law. It's almost like they want you to vote fraudulently over in California. They made it so easy. I mean, it's no different than on January 6th when they're guiding people, herding people into the Capitol building. When police are herding people into the Capitol building, basically California law is herding you to commit voter fraud. I mean, at that point, who are you to refuse the invitation? Anyway, we got more Silk or Joe Show coming up after this break, so stick with us.
Summer entertaining often means more time in the kitchen, from meal prep to serving guests, and many households are looking for products that can keep up. Here's Chef Jamie Gwen.
Whether you're hosting friends or just handling everyday messes around the home, paper towels get used constantly. Bravo is new and made from 75% curbside recycled paper and cardboard. Plus, it's the only high-performance, eco-friendly paper towel designed to handle tough jobs without sacrificing strength.
Bravo paper towels have a natural tan color. They're made without added dyes, fragrances, or elemental chlorines.
With Bravo, you're getting a towel that's highly absorbent and three times stronger when wet. So it's great for scrubbing and won't fall apart. It's durable enough to rinse and reuse, and the half-size sheets help you use only what you need. Plus, the cloth-like feel is soft on your hands.
Find Bravo towels at Target or Target.com.
Hey, y'all, I'm Kim Gravel. I'm an entrepreneur here at QVC.
And I'm John Batalise, one of the QVC hosts.
We are celebrating our 40th anniversary of QVC, and we're doing it on June 17th, also because we're number one shop on TikTok. I mean, can you believe that?
The leaders in live social selling.
Now on TikTok. So we're celebrating the 40 years that has passed and the 40 years beyond, reaching a new generation with great products.
And speaking of the products that you're going to see on that June 17th TikTok Super Brand Day, we have our Dyson that is unbelievable. It's a launch, so you don't want to miss that, with all the great bundles you need. But as far as bundles, we've got things like Philosophy, the beauty brands you're going to fall in love with, Doll 10, Love Who You Are, The Bissell. Cleans like
gotta
a cream.
Have it.
If you want to shop with us, go to our TikTok shop page, type in QVC, but you can also find us on QVC Plus, HSN Plus, on your streaming apps, or you type it into QVCplus.com. But we are so excited for 40 years.
Can't wait to see you there.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about one in four car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year, remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed, and they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover guitar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all gotta help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're gonna be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Silk Road Joe Show, everybody. Thank you for sticking with us through this hour of the program. And we are joined for this last segment by Dr. Bonner Cohen, old friend of the show. Actually, I'm not sure if he's been on this show. He's been on the Al Nathan Show plenty of times, though. He's a senior policy analyst for the Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow. His articles have appeared in outlets such as Forbes and the Wall Street Journal, and he has been interviewed on stations such as Fox News, CNN, and the BBC. Dr. Cohen, always happy to talk with you. How are you today?
I'm doing very well, and I hope you and our listeners are, too.
All right. Thank you. Yep, I am doing well. But we're talking now about something that has been holding America up from doing well economically anyway, and that's all this red tape. You know, I've had people from Americans from Prosperity talking about this, at least on the Al Nathan Show. Again, not sure if they had them on this program. The programs kind of merged since I do both. But the Americans for Prosperity, they've been pretty dedicated to trying to ram through some kind of permitting reform, trying to get that done. Because as you acknowledged in your piece, I mean, for a new mine to open up, it takes 29 years. So because of just how much red tape there is for these people to go through. And then even at that, when the mine finally does open up, it's going to take a while before the profits are reaped. So why would anyone want to open new mines in the country? And it does become much more easy to just rely on China for our resources that we need for.
Yes, and that's what we did for not many years, but for many decades. Even though we have all the natural resources you can imagine here in this country, including the precious metals and minerals that our industry and our households desperately need, we finally, in many respects, sometimes in the spirit of globalization, gave up on this and said, okay, it's not worth the trouble. We'll just import it from China or from some other country. The problem there is, of course, that you make yourself dependent, in the case of China, into our most serious geopolitical rival. And that is a place you don't want to go. And if we continue to do that, we're going to open up ourselves up to all sorts of blackmail from the government in Beijing, a government that does not wish us well, putting it mildly. And so we're going to have to turn things around if we want to take the whole idea of reshoring, that's bringing back manufacturing jobs to the United States. We've made some real strides there. So there's no doubt about it. But a lot more needs to be done because we can't afford to put ourselves in a position where we are vulnerable to global supply chains that can be interrupted because of a pandemic, a war, or two wars, or what have you. So, as your friends from the other group, the Prosperity Group, pointed out, we really need permanent permitting reform, which is something that only Congress can do. And there is a bill to bring this about. Now, it's been stuck for quite some time now, not really gaining the kind of support it's going to need to be passed, in part because the Democrats are determined that included in the permitting reform should be permits for wind and solar high voltage power lines, which opens up a huge can of worms in its own right, because ultimately it would result in ratepayers picking up the tab for these power lines that go on for hundreds of miles. So we're in a stalemate. We have lithium. We have rare earths. We have copper. We have nickel all over the country. And these mining jobs pay a lot. And they lower the cost of our manufacturing, or would lower it if we could ever get to them.
Mm. Yeah, and that's unfortunate too, because one thing that Americans for Prosperity found was there is bipartisan support for permitting reform, but it's just a matter of disagreeing over how it wants to be done. But both parties seem to agree, yes, there is a problem here that needs to be solved, and then they let themselves get in the way of themselves in far as changing
it goes. That's right, in the finest Washington tradition.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately too, I guess one other reason why this might stall is because there's just no real immediacy to it. Even if you pass, say, permitting reform tomorrow, I probably used this exact words when talking to someone from Americans for Prosperity on the Alan Nathan Show a few weeks ago, but even if we pass permitting reform tomorrow, Trump signs it tomorrow, it's still a long time before you see actually any benefits from it, because, you know, it's not like when you start a mine, you get results immediately. If you start drilling for oil, you get results immediately. It really takes time for there to be a payoff.
It does. Even in the case of oil and natural gas, here, of course, one of the big problems has been pipelines, because they have to be transported. It won't take 29 years to get it if you have proper permitting reform, but you're right, it will take some time. But as all of us get older, we notice time flies. And something, well, that's years away. Well, a couple of blinks of an eye, and all of a sudden, what was years away is tomorrow morning. So the sooner we address this in a serious manner, which, given the political realities of Washington, is going to result in some sort of compromise. Not everybody's going to be happy. But if we don't do this, we're simply going to put ourselves in a geopolitical situation that we don't want to be in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's unfortunate, because Congress has a habit of only acting when there is a crisis. Otherwise,
to the head. Exactly right. See Social Security.
Yeah,
it's going to run out of money. Everybody knows it. What are they going to do about it? Absolutely nothing until the last minute.
Mm-hmm. Yep, because they're so focused on just what's the next election going to bring me. What's the next election? And that's why, you know, something like permitting reform, it's a little too abstract and exoteric for the mind of someone who's only focused on, you know, 2-year periods, 2-year plans. Like, you know,
that's
Stalin,
right.
At least even Stalin had a 5-year plan, but congressmen have 2-year plans. So what is the solution then to just ram it to making it really known?
Right. We'll just have to see on this. But this is not a can we can continue to kick down the road. We have no choice but to address it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because to your point about China hoarding resources and blackmailing us, I mean, we saw that during the pandemic. They were the only ones producing the N95 masks. And you know, we were told that, oh, we need those in order to even go out about our daily
lives.
Which
it turns out we didn't.
Right. But
we thought we did for a long time, because they were completely ineffective.
But when we thought they were effective, China was just sitting on them. We ain't shipping any out.
That's right.
And they could do that. I mean, even if there wasn't an attempt at blackmail, China could just say, well, you know, we're having a shortage of resources on the world, so we're going to hoard these for ourselves.
No, exactly. And as long as we put ourselves in that position, we shouldn't be surprised with the negative consequences.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Bonner-Cohen, appreciate you being on the Silk Road Joe Show this weekend to talk about all this. And again, listeners, he's a senior policy analyst for the Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow, also known as CFACT, C-F-A-C-T. You can check them out online, because we are done with you for this edition of the program. And of course, our website is MainStreetRadioNetwork.com. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-978-0600 or at our website, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com.